Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. How will television's future be determined by A, NBC possibly cutting its primetime schedule, B, smart TV products and distributed bundles as channel makers, C, new ownership at the CW, and D, the upcoming 2022-23 television season? Well, we'll search for some direction with the programming insider, Mark Berman, when he joins me next. Also ahead, Samsung moves into original channel creation, the latest Lady in the Lake developments from Baltimore, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and Tuner Radio, and presented on podcast sites from Acast to Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and Podvine.com. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us wherever you are on this Wednesday afternoon for our final August 2022 edition of the program all about television's current and future, wrapping up month one of our 16th year on the air. Great to have you aboard. 81 degrees at the top of the hour here in Nueva York. Absolutely beautiful. Great sunshine. Looks like the weather's going to be good for this upcoming Labor Day weekend. We hope you make it a great one. We have a wonderful guest for you. We invite you to be part of the program. So stick around and be involved. How do you do it? Well, you listen, you pick up the phone, and then you call in. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or Tuner Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can be with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen, and other people can be live with you just like that. And Mark Berman, the program insider himself, will be with me here in New York after these news notes. More and more, smart TV products and multi-channel bundles distributed through them are creating original channels and programming. Top smart TV set maker Samsung has joined this party as part of a relaunch for its TV Plus assortment of 220-plus services offered free and as supported to consumers. Launching first, autofocus Ride and Drive and Samsung Showcase devoted to concerts, events, and original specials. Former Scripps Network senior executive Andy Singer will supervise TV Plus as the new head of content there. At a launch event from Samsung's exhibit space here in New York last night, Singer declared TV Plus at the starting gate of, as he put it, an enormous opportunity. We don't know where the end is, unquote. Local police in Baltimore now believe the incident involving Apple TV Plus's Lady in the Lake miniseries didn't happen as originally detailed this past weekend. After looking at video footage and conducting interviews on site, police now say the situation did not involve drug dealers, a driver from the production team, or extorting $50,000 with a threat of violence if production on the miniseries continued Friday afternoon. Instead, what transpired was a street vendor wanting compensation for lost business due to filming needs. Baltimore police say the investigation continues with more interviews on tap, and there's no word at this hour from Apple TV Plus or Lane Lake organizer Endeavor Content on when production will resume or to respond with the latest reports about what the Baltimore police are saying about Friday's situation. Now, quickies before our guest, Michelle Buteau's Survival of the Thickest book of essays returned to a Netflix comedy series. Buteau will star and be co-creator. Serena Williams' second-round U.S. Open tennis match will play out live tonight on ESPN. Some 2.7 million people, viewed Williams' opening night on Monday. The animated saga of Harley Quinn will remain on HBO Max for a fourth season. Disney Plus brings the Mighty Ducks Game Changers back for a second season September 28th. Season 1 premiered in March of 2021. The Closer star Kira Sedgwick will be part of the Summer I Turn Pretty sophomore season on Prime Video. And Paramount Plus and Showtime are now being promoted as a combo buy to subscribers for as low as $7.99 a month. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live here in the Big Apple, he's one of the best people covering television that you, I, or anyone knows. He is the editor-in-chief of the popular website and email daily newsletter, The Forming Insider, the I himself, Mr. Mark Berman. Mark, welcome in. Happy late summer to you.
Thank you, Simon, and happy late summer to you, too.
Thank you very much. And I have to say, coming into summer, into a busy fall season, we got a lot of things to think about. Let's start with this one. The Wall Street Journal story on Friday that NBC is exploring the idea of cutting back on primetime from 3 hours a night to two, maybe as early as a year from now.
I mean, you know what? The only thing I could think with that is the word that comes to mind is atrocious, terrible. Bad idea. It is, oh my goodness. You know what? When I heard it, it reminded me of way back when Jeff Zucker was running the network, and they came up with this brilliant idea, and I say that sarcastically, let's put on Jay Leno at 10 o'clock five nights a week, because that was going to save them a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. Well, that, of course, was one of the biggest fiascos in television history, and the fact that a network that's been around since the very beginning for endless decades would even think of cutting back its schedule is just, it's just a terrible, horrific sign for the network business. Don't you agree?
You know, we did a deep dive on this on Monday's show, Mark, and there are a couple of things I suggested at the time. One is this is not the first time that primetime has been cut back. Remember the primetime access rule in the 1970s when primetime
yeah.
went from 3.5 hours a night to three? With these local stations getting 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time, which started out as five-day-a-week, different programming each night, then became strips, and now we have the Wheel of Fortune, Family Feud, Jeopardy, and entertainment magazine shows really dominating that whole time period. The other thing was that it seemed to me that there may be two factors behind this. One is lower ratings. We are seeing the lowest ratings for broadcast television shows yet. You look at what's been going on, for example, NCIS, the biggest show on CBS, usually the number one rated show on broadcast television, just a couple of years ago was getting like 15, 16, 18 million people watching live. Now it's half that and maybe worse. And this summer, the most a major rated show can get is like 4.5 million viewers. That's it. The other thing is the hit that they're getting from smart TV sets and smart TV devices, where Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and so forth are going over, and people love it because, A, they love the shows, B, because you get less commercials, as opposed to an NBC, which may program like 15 to 20 minutes an hour in prime time, and other day parts, too, of commercials and promos, far too many commercial breaks and far too many commercials in each break.
Well, you know what? You know what's crazy about our business now, particularly network television? Now, I crunch ratings. I look at the numbers very carefully. And I remember not that long ago, a show like America's Got Talent, which every summer was the number one show. This was a show that was bringing in the summer, when HUT levels are down, households using television. It was bringing in 12 million, 13 million. It was getting a demo, a 2.5, 2.5, 2.6. Last night, based on the FAST affiliate numbers, the live numbers are coming in shortly, it got a little over 6 million, which makes it the most watched show on broadcast television, and a 0.6 rating in adults 18 to 49. A show like Password that was introduced a few weeks ago and followed it did a 0.5 in adults 18 to 49, and that's a big hit now. So the audience is so fractured in this landscape. And look, you could blame it. You could blame this on so many different things. So, you know, the rise of streaming services, there's so many other ways to consume content that no show on a broadcast network is going to be anything near what it used to be. However, when you hear news that NBC is talking about cutting back an hour, that's basically giving up and saying we can't program and we don't want to and we need to save money. And that's a terrible sign for the broadcast landscape. And you also have to remember, Simon, and you know this, 10 o'clock on a broadcast network is pivotal because it leads into the local newscasts on these affiliated stations across the country, and that's where they make a good amount of money. And, you know, little by little, the ratings are going down and down and down. But instead of saying, I'm going to cut an hour out every night, we're going to cut back the schedule, why don't you focus on the caliber of the programming? Why don't you start giving us shows that we want to sit and watch, that we're going to look forward to, that we're going to, you know, why don't you do that instead of, you know, this to me, I feel like they're giving up. And it's just a very bad sign. It really is. It's very disturbing to even hear this. So there's no way. And then the other thing is, because this actually really riles me up, it really gets me very upset. I already envision having a conference call with NBC or at their upfront, and they, you know, they're spinning this and talking about why this is such a good idea and why it's, you know, there was recently a conference or whatever it was, the upfront, and the person in short, you know, the person that gave the presentation was talking about how Peacock has delivered on every promise that NBC made, which is not true. So instead of fabricating things and instead of, you know, looking for ways to save money and looking for ways to cut back, why don't you aggressively find the kind of shows that people will go in search of to watch? So that's my assessment.
If NBC were to do a cutback in prime time as early as next fall, a year from now, how much time do they have to, A, make the call, B, get a green light from NBC management and Comcast, the parent company, talk to the affiliate stations, 200-plus, talk to their affiliate board, give them time to figure out, hey, how are we going to program this extra hour, and make it happen?
Well, you know what? When you think of something like this, you think of some, this could be something, you know, that they're thinking of way down in the future. But let's talk about the programming for a second. Let's look at NBC's schedule now, what they have coming up or what they've had this past season. They have 3 hours of Law and Order. They have 3 hours of Chicago. That's already 6 hours of Dick Wolf's schedule. They have 2 hours of The Voice. They have Sunday Night Football. They barely have any comedies. And, you know, and they have Dateline. So realistically, all they need to do is, and this is where they're probably thinking this is such a good idea. Now, in the old days of television, way back when we were kids, you'd have a network show that would have 30 episodes a season, 32 episodes, you know, 28 episodes. Now, it, you know, as the years passed, it ended up being 22. Now it's rare for a show to even have 22. So they could kind of look at it and say, well, we have three Law and Orders. So technically, if we cut out the 10 o'clock one and save it for midseason and move it up a half hour, that's going to totally extend, and they're not going to need as many new shows on the air. So realistically, NBC's probably thinking, we've got the inventory. We don't have to worry about that. We could extend, you know, we could extend it, you know, make midseason could extend longer than it normally is. We could maybe throw in some original programming in the summer that we wouldn't normally have had. So in their minds, this is a cost-saving opportunity that's going to benefit everyone. But I don't see it as being beneficial, Simon. I see it as them giving up. And I see it as we're throwing in the towel. We realize the ratings are down. We can't fight it. We can't afford it. And so in terms of how quickly they can do it, I mean, I couldn't answer the question because I don't know per se, but to me, it's a very big deal. I mean, but then again, look what they, you know, when they did the Jay Leno thing, they just decided we're going to cut back and we're going to put him on 5 nights a week, have a new Tonight Show host. Of course, that was a huge fiasco. And then look what happened. And their ratings went south very quickly. To me, I mean, I don't know how soon they could do it by. I mean, if they say they're going to do it by next year. But to me, this signals a desperation. I feel like it's a losing proposition. And I feel like if they do it, ABC could do it, CBS could do it. This could be the new norm in broadcast television. And I'll tell you another thing. I mean, let me stay on my soapbox for a second. And you remember this also, I'm sure. I remember this time of the year, every year, I say to myself, it's going to be September. We only have 2 weeks, 3 weeks till the start of the new TV season. I'm so excited about this show and that show and this show. And I'd watch TV and they'd have these catchy, you know, like these jingles and promoting their shows. And there was an aura of excitement. It was just so exciting. You'd have your fall TV preview. You'd have all, you know, I'd run to get my copy of Variety. There was so much excitement in the air. There is none of that anymore. There's none of that anymore. I mean, you look at the fall schedule and think, what do I want to watch on a broadcast network? I mean, what is that I'm excited about? There's nothing. So to me, this whole idea of cutting back an hour reeks from desperation, and I don't recommend doing it. I think it's a very big mistake. And I don't care how they present it, and I don't care how they're going to talk about it if they do it afterwards about what a great thing it is. It's not a great thing. It's a bad idea.
We're just getting started with Mr. Programming Insider himself, Mark Bermey, joins me here in New York. We are surveying the landscape of where TV goes from here. And like I said, we're just getting started. We want to hear from you, too. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Second of three episodes we're doing this week. And our first September episode and final one this week comes your way on Friday. And have we got something special for you as our first half hour. Believe it or not, next month, which is only less than a few hours away. MASH celebrates 50 years of its launch on CBS, and Reels is putting together a special retrospective on the program, and we will have a special retrospective for our first half hour. We'll have the executive producer and director of that special, Andy Streitfeld and Brad Osborne. We'll also have a special presentation with Fox Executive Vice President Dan Harrison, who is a very big expert on all things MASH. Join us for our MASH at 50 segment. That's the opening part, the opening half hour of Friday's episode. And on the second half hour, we'll showcase a new weekend series coming to syndication LA TV networks on Saturday and Sunday called Daily Flash Latino. The executive producer, Hugo Arenas, will join us. This is a series, by the way, that will premiere this weekend, Labor Day weekend, in 45 markets and on Saturday afternoon, that's September 3rd, on LA TV network. And both English, and there'll be both English and Spanish formats, 30 and 60-minute formats, too. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Before we get to the rest of our agenda here, Mark, if you are Dick Wolf and you hear something, what are you thinking right now, especially since you control Wednesday night on CBS with the Chicago Trilogy, 3 hours, the Law & Order Trilogy, 3 hours on Thursday, which is going to have a big crossover event coming up next month. What are you thinking? Are you thinking, you know, two of my shows are going to be definitely under the gun if NBC does this? And two, should I say, you know what, I'm going to put my shows on those shows on Peacock if you do this, or to heck with you, NBC, I'm taking all my shows and we'll put them on somewhere else?
Well, first of all, you have to remember that Dick Wolf has, you know, he has now 3 shows on CBS, so it's not just about NBC anymore. But, I mean, here's the thing with Dick Wolf. I mean, look, NBC worships the ground Dick Wolf walks on. I mean, this is a man that's basically carried the network for decades. I mean, it's his presence on the network. It's 2 full nights a week, so, I mean, that's 6 hours of a 22-hour schedule. That's almost a third. I mean, it's insane. I mean, yeah, NBC could basically say, we're not going to air organized crime. We're going to put it on Peacock. They could do that, or they could say, we're going to hold off organized crime, and we're going to start that in midseason, and we'll put that on at 9 o'clock, and that's when SVU will, you know, not have as many episodes or whatever they decide they're going to do with all that. So if I'm Dick Wolf, I'm basically thinking to myself, you know, I need to kind of really focus on streaming because I really feel like streaming is where it is now. And so many of these producers like Shonda Rhimes and, you know, so many of them have migrated over to streaming because of how things have changed on networks where, you know, and Dick Wolf, listen. Is he going to be happy about this? No. Is he going to think I need to abandon NBC? No, he's not. But if he's Dick Wolf and he's a smart man and he knows what's, you know, he knows what's what works for him, he's going to maybe think, well, maybe it's time for me to do streaming. But look how well NBC has served him. I mean, it's insane. And so, yeah, if they cut back to 10 o'clock hour, I mean, that's not to say they're canceling Law & Order Organized Crime. They're just going to put it on earlier, later in the season, or they're going to move it to Peacock. And, you know, the issue that's happening with all the broadcast networks, as you know, Simon, you have a show like Dancing with the Stars on ABC, which I've watched since the very beginning. Now it's going to be on Disney Plus. Am I going to watch it on Disney Plus? Quite honestly, no, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to do that. And I think it's going to obviously lose, you know, that's been downtrending for years also. But I think, you know, what's happening, a lot of these shows that were on a broadcast network are migrating to streaming. And I'll give you an example. This is an interesting thing, Simon. I've been watching Only Murders in the Building. I love it. I just love it. I am so invested in it. I just got through the second episode of season 2, and it just so happens that I have commercials when I watch, you know, my Hulu has commercials, what I get. But it still doesn't deter me from the show. There's something about the caliber of the show, the writing, the acting. You don't find that on a broadcast network anymore. You just don't find it. So I think, again, you know, I don't think, getting back to Dick Wolf, I don't think he's panicking. I mean, the man's got to be worth gazillions by now, so he's not panicking. Does he think it's a good thing? No, he's not going to think it's a good thing. But he could pick himself up and go, he could go anywhere else if he wanted to. He has probably an open invite to do his shows anywhere he wants. And getting back to this whole content thing, no matter what we talk about, it always comes back to content, and it's the content that matters. And the broadcast networks are lacking in that. And I want to just say something which is interesting. You mentioned that that MASH is celebrating 50 years. Well, it reminds me of two other shows that are about to also hit 50. That's The Waltons on September 14th is hitting 50. Bob Newhart is going to be hitting 50, the Bob Newhart Show. These three shows premiered that fall season on CBS in 1972. And that was a time when there was excitement and there was all these some of them were really good, some of them weren't. I just think it all goes back to the content. And for a network to say, let's cut out an hour, 10 o'clock, I feel like it's just, I'm giving up, throwing in the towel. And, you know, let's spin it into something wonderful. I don't care what they say, it's very bad. And I really, really hope, as someone who writes about the business and someone who's a fan of television, I hope they don't do it. I think it's a bad idea. But I don't feel badly for Dick Wolf. Trust me on that. He's doing quite well for himself.
Yes, he is, Mark. And by the way, he does have an app because he's working on a half-hour procedural for Amazon Freevee. It's supposed to happen, if not this year, sometime in 2023. I mentioned earlier in the news notes about Samsung now joining other smart TV set makers like LG and Vizio and devices like Roku in creating, not just aggregating original channels and content,
right,
but creating, actually making the content, actually creating the channels. LG has an NCAA championship channel. Vizio for the last year has been creating all sorts of channels, including a hip-hop service called Polaris, based here in New York. Roku is now making made-for-TV movies and original scripted series, one of which, Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, is up for an Emmy Award next week. And Daniel Radcliffe, who is doing the Weird Al Yankovic movie that Roku is backing, which is supposed to launch premiere in November. A lot of people are now thinking he may be up for an Emmy and the film may be up for an Emmy next year. What do you make of this, the fact that we're now seeing the devices that are giving Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Peacock and Apple TV, et cetera, the distribution they need to viewers to get subscribers, to get original programming off the grind, that they're now in the business of creating content like anybody else?
You know what? The only I could think of two words to describe how I feel about this, and the two words are too much. It's all too much, Simon. It's too much. There's too much of this out there. It's impossible to keep. Let me actually take that back. It's not impossible to have a hit show because again, you have a show like Only Murders in the Building. You have so many shows on streaming that manage to cut through the clutter, and the critics notice it, and it's up for Emmy Awards and, you know, this and that. But it's just there's so much original content out there, and there's so many ways to consume it. And do I want to now seek a show on Samsung, you know, through Samsung or whatever? No, I don't. I feel like there's too much of it as it is. And we're in this era of, you know, there's a term called peak TV. And again, this is the reason why a broadcast network is struggling to find an audience because there's so many other places to go. I just think it's all too much. I mean, everything's changing. I mean, even the streaming world is changing now. You have Netflix now that's going to start having ads. You have other places that are merging. You know, everything's changing. It's just all too much, and it's going to get to a point where we've reached a zenith in this, and everything's going to start trending downward. So I just think it's too much, and we need to take focus here, and you know we need to focus on the content and not keep introducing new outlets for original scripted programming. We already have enough, you know. And it also gets to the problem, Simon, which I'm having now. I'm sure everyone's having. I watch Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon. I'm watching Only Murders in the Building on Hulu. I'm watching Stranger Things and Virgin River on Netflix. I'm watching, and it all adds up. You get your bills every month. You're like, wait a minute, how much am I spending on all of this? It all starts to add up, and then I have cable on top of that. So I think this is, I'm dizzy. I really need to lay down thinking of all of this. So please stop with all the new outlets. Stop with, you know, Samsung now saying we're going to get into the content game. We don't need any more content providers. We need good programs in the right places. No, we don't need additional outlets. But that's my opinion. And it's crazy, right?
Before we wrap this half hour, I'm going to keep you on for the second half hour, Mark. What do you think about the CW situation? We now have a station group owner, one of the biggest, Nexstar, owning the majority of the CW. They've made it very clear that a year from now, the CW is going to look far different in its programming lineup, which is 2 hours a night, by the way, 7 nights a week already, than currently.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Simon. The CW already looks very different. You know, I give Mark Pedowitz a lot of credit. You know, he came in, you know, at the time, the CW was hanging on with America's Next Top Model. And they didn't really have an identity. And then suddenly there was The Flash, and suddenly there was this superhero show, and that one, and this one, and that one. And, you know, of course, if something works, you're going to see a lot more of it. So the CW became a destination for superhero dramas. Now, a network like the CW does not get a sizable audience. They get a very small audience. But the thing that these shows did for the CW was it gave them attention. You'd go to Comic-Con, you'd see their shows all over the place. You would, you know, they got the younger audience watching, the people, you know, so these were the people they wanted. But if you look at the CW schedule this fall, which is crazy, they only have one superhero show on, which is DC Stargirl. They have a few in mid-season, and basically what the CW is doing now is they're taking shows internationally, putting it on the network. That's a way to save money and have original product. So basically they've moved away from the action, the superhero shows, and they're putting in more reality. They're putting on more shows that they're acquiring, not producing for themselves. And the schedule this fall looks entirely different. So my hope is with this acquisition that they'll come in and really, you know, perk them up and start doing, you know, kind of like find another identity for them. Because I think right now the CW does not have an identity. And that's not to say, look, I give them credit for a show like All American. I give them credit for All American Homecoming. These are decent shows. They had Jane the Virgin, which never had an audience but was a quality show. You know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I think that was the name of it. That was another one. So they did try to introduce quality shows. They just couldn't find an audience, and they kept relying heavily on these, you know, superhero dramas. And then the other thing about the CW was they never canceled anything. It was like every year, everything's coming back, everything. This season, they wiped out half the slate. So I'm curious to see what happens with the network. I think they need an overhaul, and I think this could be a good thing for them. It could be. I mean, this is one situation. I mean, I'm complaining about everything. But I don't think it's a terrible thing. Maybe they'll revamp them. They've got to do something because right now the CW is kind of really doesn't have an identity. Who are they? What are they, you know, what's their identity? They don't really have one.
Yeah. It is a hodgepodge right now, although some people still see it as a superhero network, although that is starting to wane. By the way, Jeff Johns, the creator and executive producer of Stargirl, was on our show Monday, and the first episode of season 3 is tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on your local CW station. And one show, by the way, from the CW, which I've enjoyed, that I would also put in the mix, you said All American Homecoming, Kung Fu, which started out as how is this going to be different from the original version with David Carradine. It really has taken on an identity of its own. It's a great Asian family drama that anybody, by the way, can deal with, and also has taken the lead on dealing with some of the issues Asian Americans face today, such as hate crimes and so on. So kudos to Christina Kim and everybody involved in it, and Greg Berlanti, by the way. And it'll be interesting to see how Greg Berlanti, by the way, responds to the new look coming to CW and whatever Dexstar does with it. Mark's going to stay with us for a good chunk of the second half hour, and when we get back to Mark, we're going to find out what he thinks about this upcoming season, including The Lord of the Rings that premieres on Friday. The reviews have started to pour in over the last hour, and so far, they're superlative. And we'll also get his thoughts about House of the Dragon as well and other shows he's looking forward to seeing in this upcoming season ahead. Plus, we'll have our classic trivia question, and we'll also have some remembrances of two very interesting people, one on camera and one off camera, who passed away yesterday. One wonderful actor, William Reynolds. You may remember him from either the FBI, which he came in on season 3 and was alongside Ephraim Zimmer Jr., and from one of the best Twilight Zone episodes called The Purple Testament. And if we have time, we'll tell you about a very intimate situation where Reynolds almost lost his life the night that it was supposed to premiere on CBS, that episode. And also, one of the best people in the world of editing, film and videotape, Tucker Weard, 5-time Emmy Award winner. So So we'll remember both of those marvelous people. And that's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, we reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for West Side Wednesdays, a very unusual show on the world of entertainment. West Side Wednesdays, check it out tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And the best of BTR you can always find 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Wednesday Hump Day, final day of August 2022, and month number one of our 16th year on the air. Simon Abbott with you live from the Web of York. And joining me once again, Mr. Plumbing Insider himself, Mark Berman. You can check out his wonderful website at plumbinginsider.com. And he has a great daily email that is must reading for anybody who wants to catch up on where things are at in the world of television. So how are you sort of handicapping this upcoming season, Mark?
Well, you know, again, when I look at the full schedule, when I look at the, I think to myself, Simon, like, well, what shows did I watch last season that I really loved? And most of them were on streaming, I have to say. But I do, you know, look, I have mainstays. I'm a big reality fan. I love Survivor. I love watching that. That's, you know, that's not that I watch every summer. I'm into Big Brother. Those are shows that I love, that kind of show. And, of course, there are certain shows that I will, you know, I still watch Shark Tank, for example. There are other shows that I'll still watch. But in terms of the new shows, so as, beginning with the broadcast networks, I mean, I can handicap the ones I think are going to work. But in terms of, like, my particular taste or something that I think is really going to stand out, I don't necessarily see anything. I mean, I think the one show that I think is positioned very well, for example, on CBS is Fire Country. It's out of SWAT. It's into Blue Bloods. It fits well into their Friday night, drama lineup. But is it going to get a huge audience? No. Is it going to get a large demo? No. I mean, but it's a show that could probably stay on the air because it fits in well for what they are. I mean, there are a few other shows. I think a show like East New York might have a shot on CBS on Sunday at 9, perhaps. It could. But I don't necessarily see anything that's breaking out. I've heard some positive buzz on the reboot of Quantum Leap on NBC. But, you know, here's the thing about Quantum Leap that I don't think people realize. The original version really did not have much of an audience. That was a show that one of the early shows where the networks decided we're going to focus on the demos. We're not going to focus on the audience size, and we're going to basically, you know, we're going to keep this on because it's bringing in a younger audience, and that's what we want. So do I think Quantum Leap will be a big hit for NBC? No. Do I think any show will be a big hit? No, I don't think so. I think some will stay on the air. I think others won't. And I think, unfortunately, there is not that one buzzworthy show that people are just clamoring to watch. And I've said this to you, I think, before, Simon. I remember the season when we had both Desperate Housewives and Lost coming up on ABC, and I remember there was a buzz in the air and there was excitement. And This Is Us, for example, you remember the summer before it premiered that, you know, the YouTube went viral. I mean, everybody was, like, really excited about this very unusual show about these three siblings born on the same day. There was an excitement in the air. You felt it. You wanted to watch it. There is nothing that I could see that I'm excited about. Are you? Is there anything you're excited about?
Well, let's start with broadcast. I would say Quantum Leap does intrigue me in this regard. I love the original Quantum Leap, which, by the way, people are now seeing on Sci-Fi. And what made the original Quantum Leap so great was it had heart. It had a premise. It was a time travel premise that everybody could relate to because it was not about changing the big moments of history. It was like our town, like changing the small moments, the turning point moments of people that you really wanted to care about. And the way it was handled by Don Belisario, the way Scott Bakula handled it in the main role was terrific. I think the question is this version of Quantum Leap going to have that heart? I don't know. It could end up like The Equalizer, where I think the issue with that show, and I have to say, as much as I love Queen Latifah, I think the show is a bomb. And I think the show does not deserve it again because it doesn't have New York focus. I think the show has a lot of bad things about it, including bad script writing, including bad music score, including not much New York. I think they do too much. We don't see Queen Latifah on the streets of New York the way we saw Edward Woodward do. Edward Woodward created a buzz with the way he did that character. Queen Latifah does not, sadly. And I'm really surprised at that because they had a lot of good people working that show. It's hanging in. So I think, for one thing, it's Quantum Leap. On cable, not much, because a lot of virtual shows, scripted and unscripted, are not happening. But it looks like Lord of the Rings, the thing I think I want to talk to you about now is it looks like Amazon is going to have a 1-2 punch, which I think we'll all be watching. One is Lord of the Rings that premieres on Friday. The Hollywood Reporter, Variety, has come out with a roundup of critic reviews, and so far the reviews are amazing. Rotten Tomatoes just came out with a 93 score for the critics' reaction to it. A lot of people think this is definitely going to be something people are going to watch for the characters, for the storylines, for the cinematography, for the production values. It looks like the production values are superb, cinematic quality. And then you have the premiere of Thursday Night Football on Amazon. And that, I think, is going to be the big, you know, how much of an audience will it get without Michaels moving from Sunday Night Football, Kirk Herbstreit staying put with ESPN, but now becoming the new play-by-play person. You know, how is that going to work out, that 1-2 punch?
Well, you know, I'm not, you know, personally speaking, I'm not convinced that football belongs on a streaming service. And the reason is, I don't know if they're going to have the bandwidth to handle it. I mean, you know, the thing about streaming, Simon, you know, and I agree with Lord of the Rings. I mean, the reviews have been stellar. I'm really excited to see it. I mean, listen, for the price that they are spending on this show, this better well be a big thing for them. And I think it will be. And I think it's going to get a lot of accolades. I think it'll get, you know, Emmy attention. I think all that will happen. But then you have to also think of how much they spent on it. If every broadcaster or streamer spent that kind of money on a show, we'd be in, you know, they would be in a lot of troubles. But I think it will get a lot of attention. But I honestly think, I mean, you know, with the whole issue with sports, and I've talked about this before, you know, like everybody, you know, people are predicting the Super Bowl eventually is going to be on a streaming service. First of all, the problem with that is I don't know if the bandwidth can handle it. I think, is the screen going to freeze? That's the problem with sports. Is it, you know, because, you know, that's the issue with streaming. You know, I could be in the middle of a show. You could be in the middle of a show, and suddenly it freezes. So that's an issue that are they prepared to handle that, number one. And then the other issue is we don't really know who watches these shows on streaming. We don't get data. They don't look at the data. They get it, but they don't release it. So it's a lot of it's speculation. I mean, how many people are watching Stranger Things? I don't really know. I could tell you I watch it because it's one of my favorite shows. So I think, you know, I mean, I'm excited about there's a couple of shows coming up on streaming that I'm curious to see. Devil in Ohio on Netflix seems interesting. It's some kind of like a like a sci-fi thing. The update of American Gigolo on Showtime, I'm curious about. Amazon has a show called Jungle that I'm curious to see. And I, you know, the thing about The Equalizer, I completely agree with you, because that's a cookie cutter show. That's a cookie cutter network show that's done a certain way. And it's interesting because when you watch a show like Only Murders in the Building, you really get the feel of Manhattan. You get the essence of it, the way it's filmed. The city is part of the cast. So I agree. The Equalizer is more of a generic cookie-cutter show that the broadcasters are known for doing, as are, you know, shows like, you know, NCIS, the franchise, Law & Order. There's a certain formula. There's the way they do it. And I don't think they're ever going to deviate from that. So... But I mean, there are shows I'm going to watch. I mean, listen, I may be, you know, complaining about this, that, and the other thing. But I always have the TV on in some capacity. I always watch TV, and I still watch nostalgia television all the time. I love to watch. Mm-hmm. I love to watch old shows. It takes me back, escapes from my problems, and you know, it's. I watch Antenna TV, Get TV, Me TV. Yeah. I watch all those.
This TV, yeah. Yeah, you hit on the head, Mark, about The Equalizer, because I was a big fan of the original version. And what made the version so great, the original version from the 80s, was Edward Warwick's performance, which I still think was one of the greatest mistakes the Emmys people made by not giving the Emmy Award for that performance. It was because it was a character study, because New York was really featured, because it hit a nerve, at the time when people thought, oh, my God, crime is all over the place. Nobody's, you know, sticking up for me. And here comes Edward Woodward, and he became a local celebrity because of it. Plus, it had a style. It had Stuart Copeland's great music score. It had wonderful acting. A lot of good actors like Vincent D'Onofrio and Christian Slater made their debuts in television from that program. It had good writing. It had very good direction. There was a pace and a style to it That was very rare for television at the time. And then, again, you look at the new version, and it's not there. It is, as you mentioned, it's cookie cutter. It's trying to be another formulaic show, and the whole idea of the show is not to be formulaic. So that's what happens. But I think there's some other things that are popping up, too.
I totally agree with you with The Equalizer, because that premiered in the fall of 1985. And what were shows like in the fall of 1985? It was all, they all kind of looked alike. It was, you had your typical crime solvers. You had, and then this show came on and it just completely broke the mold. It was the same thing. I remember with a show like Miami Vice, because it had a different look, it had a different feel, a different style. So, yeah, so that's what the broadcast networks need to do. Instead of remaking something and kind of doing it in a generic way, do it differently. Make it exciting. Make it different. And they don't do that.
And that's what people like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon are doing, especially, for example, I think one of the big shows of the summer has been Amazon's version of A League of Their Own. Terrific show, very atmospheric, very well written, very directed, very well cast. We're seeing some sleeper shows like Mo, the new series on, I think it's Netflix, that Rami Youssef put together as executive producer. He's getting sensational reviews, and people are saying about it. Partner Track, Georgia Lee, we just had, produced in New York, has its own style. Arden Show may be another one of the breakout stars of that series. And coming up in September, we've got Reboot, the new series from the creator of Modern Family, Stephen Levitan. I've seen some clips. Looks really good. It's like a show-within-a-show kind of format. You've got coming up later in the year for Netflix, Wednesday, The Addams Family Show. Jenna Ortega looks like she is a winner. Tim Burton directed some of the episodes. He's also executive producer. The folks behind Smallville, Alfred Gow and Miles Millar, produced it. Has Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia Adams, Louis Guzman as Gomez. I've seen clips. It looks sensational. It's funny. It's horrific. And if you love Charles Adams, I think you'll really, really, really find this show is a super kicker. There's a lot of great things that are popping. A lot of these sleeper shows all over the place, on Hulu, on Amazon, on Disney Plus, on and on and on, I think could draw some buzz as the season goes on.
Well, you know, it's interesting what you said about A League of Their Own. I want to make mention. This is very important to mention. This was already remade. People don't remember it. It was remade by ABC. And there was a conference call. There was a call a few weeks ago, and I remember bringing this up, because I don't think they wanted anybody to remember it. And that's an example of this was remade on ABC, but they didn't remake it in a way that people were talking about it or excited about it. It felt like a generic network sitcom. This one feels fresher. It feels more unique, And then also, listen, let's be fair to the broadcast networks. When a show's on streaming, it's different. I mean, you don't have creative restrictions. You have a bigger budget. You don't do as many episodes generally. And there's so many more ways that it will be better because it's on a streaming service, because of all, they don't have any of these restrictions that a network has. But I think, again, going back to what we originally talked about and what we are segueing into, everything comes down to the content. And, put something on that has a different feel and that are getting people talking and, put it on YouTube and get it out there like that This Is Us video, 6 years ago, and get people talking, get them excited, get them invested. And that's how you get attention. And, so I think there are things I'm excited about seeing. I'm certainly hoping NBC doesn't do that and cut an hour out. I think that's a very bad idea. And I really hope that the broadcasters could come up with some really big hit shows that people will watch and they will talk about. I just don't see it this season.
Before we get to our final topic, Mark, it seems to me that one cable network that is going the opposite way from a lot of others, like TBS, TNT, and so forth, because of the elimination of scripted shows, is AMC. They seem to have really gotten a new groove with shows like Dark Winds and Moonhaven. Tomorrow night they are premiering their first animated hour-long drama, Pantheon. The buzz is terrific. The advanced reviews are great. And I think one show to keep an eye out for is Interview with a Vampire, the beginning of what AMC hopes will be its next big franchise, the Anne Rice novels turned into television. That's premiering, I believe, in early October. Mayfair Witches, the other kingpin or linchpin of that of what they want to do, premieres early next year. I think both could be really very important shows for AMC. AMC seems to be doubling down on more scripted shows, working with AMC Plus as well, their service for smart TV sets, and also All Be Okay, All Black, is turning into a very interesting service all of its own, the non-commercial service aimed at African Americans, with a lot of new talent being featured in original scripted and unscripted series. But Interview with the Vampire, I think, is a one to watch.
I agree with you on that, and I give AMC a lot of credit because they're certainly the anomaly now, because most cable networks are cutting back on any scripted programming, and everything that's being done is migrating to the streamers. Like, it's sort of like cable is the stepchild now, and AMC is not cutting back. And look at AMC's history. I mean, look at what they went from to who they became, and they're still forging ahead. So I give them a lot of credit. That's how you do it. You don't, you know, every time I wake up, there's another show on TBS or TNT that we're not doing anymore. No more scripted shows. So they're making it into like, they're telling us they don't care. And they're just, you know, they don't care about the audience. They're just putting shows on that will be cost effective and what have you. But AMC, good for them. That's how everybody should be. Absolutely.
In a moment, Mark and I will trade thoughts on who will be the Emmy winners in the major categories on September 12th, carried live on NBC and Peacock for the first time, coast to coast, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. But first, I want to let you know that our next week's shows will be on Tuesday and Friday at this hour, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Coming up on our Tuesday show, that's on September 6th, among our guests, we'll revisit a service that started a couple months ago, 1S Network, with entrepreneur Olga Nesterova. We had her on the program along with a number of her producers. On the Tuesday show, we'll have the producers from two of their most popular shows after a few months of operation. One is a show called Discover Code Connect, and another is called King Kong Academy. Very interesting programs. A revisit of 1S Network, that's on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific here on Tomorrow Televised. So very quickly, let's trade thoughts on who might win those Emmys on September 12th. First, comedy category, best comedy.
Well, I'll tell you who I think will win, and I think who should win. I think Ted Lasso will win. I think Abbott Elementary should win, and I think Abbott Elementary is such a great example of a broadcast network that could still do it right. But I think Ted Lasso is going to win. What about you?
I think Abbott Elementary is going to pull it out. It may be the only major broadcast winner, and here's why. The Critics' Choice Awards over the last couple of months. They've been giving it a lot of love, and even though Abbott Elementary is not a viewer hit yet, it is a critical darling. And given the fact that most of the major awards have gone to cable or streaming or I call smart TV distributed services, I think that one may just get it. I would say you mentioned Only Murders in the Building before. I think that might have an outside chance. But right now, I'm picking Abbott Elementary for best comedy. Best drama.
You know what? The more you talk, the more I'm agreeing with you. Because I kept going back and forth between Ted Lasso and Abbott Elementary. But I really think it could be Abbott. It could be. So we'll see. And it's exciting for ABC. It's exciting to have. It's not a big hit show.
It is. And by the way, it reminds me of what happened with Hill Street Blues. Hill Street Blues in its first season was not a rating winner. It was down the bottom of the dump. Then it got all the big Emmy nominations and a lot of the Emmy Awards for Best Drama that year. And it then became the Super TV Classic in the second season. So that might just happen. If Abbott Elementary wins the Best Comedy Award, just might happen.
It's one of ABC's best shows
in a long time.
Simon, don't forget about All in the Family. I mean, it had no audience.
Yep.
And then it got nominated for Emmys. It won Emmys, suddenly season two. And, of course, that was a different time, but... But drama, who do you think is going to win the best drama?
You first. You're the guest.
Okay, I'm going to go with, I mean, I'll tell you who I would have loved Stranger Things to pull this off because it's my favorite show, but I think it's going to be Succession again. I think Succession is going to win. There's been so much buzz on Better Call Saul. But I think it's going to be Succession. I think they're going to pull it off. What do you think?
I would love to see Better Call Saul pull it off, given it was the final season, given it went so well. Bob Odenkirk is marvelous. Rhea Seehorn, I think, may get some Emmy love for the first time now that she's finally nominated. And it's a very tough choice because you're right. Succession is clearly the favorite. Squid Game could be a surprise. And if not in the best drama category, in the acting categories. I'm going to go out on a limb because there is a show that has been gaining a lot of steam, a lot of critical response, and it's also, I think, tying in with the public, and that's Severance. That show in recent months, Apple TV Plus's workplace drama with a dystopian feel to it, it's unlike any show you see. Ben Stiller's done a marvelous job. The opening title, which is up for Best Main Title by Oliver Latta, a fantastic talent, will win. I think Severance could pull it out. It is getting a lot of love, and Stiller is making the rounds. He was on Late Night with Seth Meyers. I think a lot of people love the idea of this, like, what could a workplace be like the way that future unfolds. So I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think Severance might win. I think Pachinko, I also like Pachinko, too. There's so many good shows up this year in the best drama category. But I'm going to go on a limb and go for Severance. Best made-for-TV movie.
I think the TV movie version of Ray Donovan, I think that stands out among the others, I think. I mean, I think it's got the brand recognition. I think it was a well-done movie. I think it was well-received. I think it's going to go to Ray Donovan. What do you think?
I'd love to see a Survivor win. Disclosure, we had the executive producer on. I think it got hurt because Ben Foster's performance, which was one of the best performances of the year, was not nominated. We're not going to go over – we've gone over this a number of times in this program. I think the way the TV Academy treats made-for-TV movies is awful. They have to change the format so that acting categories, writing, directing, there are separate categories in made-for-TV movies and miniseries. I was going to say The Survivor, but I'm going to go along with you. And I think Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas could be a surprise. And what a surprise would that be for Roku if they pulled out. And finally, Best Miniseries.
I would have to say The White Lotus. I think that stands out above. I mean, it could be Dope Sick. I think it's going to be The White Lotus. I think that one stands out. I think that's gotten a lot of attention. So I'm going with The White. What do you think?
Agreed. Great miniseries. I think that's going to win. And a very tough choice, too. I like Maid also. Margaret Qualley's performance was marvelous last year. And it's going to probably play show, whatever. But for me, I agree with you. White Lotus. So we agree
Well, I do want to say one thing. I think one of the biggest wins will be, this is what I think, for Best Lead Actress in a Comedy. Now, last year at this time, I kept saying it's Jean Smart all the way. Jean Smart was wonderful again, wonderful. But I really think Quinta Brunson's going to win. I think this is the one category Abbott Elementary will win in, definitely, but Lead Actress in a Comedy. And I hope she does. She is well-deserving. Well-deserving. So we'll see.
I do, too. If she wins, then all looks good for Abbott Elementary to win Best Comedy Series. We will certainly see. Again, the Emmy Awards are September 12th on NBC and Peacock, live to all coasts, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. More details, you go to NBC.com or go to Emmys.com if you want to get the full list of all the Emmy nominees. And if you want to check up on Mr. Chroming Insider himself, check out his website, chromingsider.com. It's great reading, as well as his daily email newsletter. I promise you, you want to be caught up on what's going on in the world of television, the entire world, and be very entertained. A lot of the features he does includes when things started, way back when. He offers a wonderful trivia question, too, every column. Check it out and enjoy. Mark, it is always a pleasure to have you on this program. To you and your family, have a wonderful Labor Day weekend, and let's hope for a fantastic season this year, whether it's broadcast, cable, or the whole smart TV universe.
Same to you, Simon. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. You're welcome. Take care. You and your family have a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
Take care, Simon. So long.
You too. Mark Bremen, the Plumbing Insider, joining us live here in New York. Classic trivia question time. Let's give it to you. And if you're first with the correct answer, we've got three prizes in store for you. We have the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas Quartet, and we have two best-selling books for you, The Unexpected Danny Green by Paul Friedman and Flirting with Fame by PR guru Dan Harari, both recent guests on this program. The question is simple. Who created Candid Camera? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and email address when you send the email. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. In order to win, you got to play in. One more time, here's the question. Who created Candid Camera? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And remember, in order to win, you got to play in. Do it today, and all the very best. And before we leave you, two things. First of all, I mentioned the passing of two people, one in front and behind the camera. William Reynolds was a marvelous actor. After years toiling in super supporting roles in film, he went to television. Jack Webb gave his break with a short-lived series based on his movie Pete Kelly and his radio show, Pete Kelly's Blues. Then Warner Brothers gave him a starring role in two shows, The Islanders and The Gallant Men. Both lasted a season. And then later on, he got back with Warner Brothers and Quinn Martin in the third season of the FBI and stayed with it for the rest of the run opposite Efren Zimbalist Jr. He also gave a great performance in one of the best first season episodes of Twilight Zone, The Purple Testament. And Tucker Wiord, one of the best editors in both film and videotape editing, five-time winner in the editing categories. He did everything from Norman Lear comedies to The Carol Burnett Show. His first Emmy win was for the final episode of Carol Burnett's seasons on CBS, her original variety show. And then he was the editor for Murphy Brown and won several Emmys for that work. Candace Bergen, in a story about an obituary about Tucker Wiord, said that Tucker was responsible for having everybody on Murphy Brown look great in its entire decade run on CBS, most on Monday nights. William Reynolds, Tucker Wiord passed away yesterday, and both in their respective professions will be very, very missed. And finally, I want to take a moment and thank all of you for your wonderful listening of our first month of year 16. From August 1st on, we kicked it off with our 50th anniversary special with Amy Winter, the Executive Vice President and Head of Programming at Lifetime, Ryan Chinaski, GM of Topic, and a lot of great guests in, right up to today's guest, the wonderful Mark Berman, Mr. Programming Insider himself. So thanks to all of our guests. Thanks to all of you. We really appreciate it. Keep up listening. And be with us on Friday for our first September episode when we will bring you our MASH retrospective at 50 with the executive producer and director of the new Reels documentary about the series and its impact on television, Andy Strofo and Brad Osborne, and Fox Executive Vice President Dan Harrison, who's also a big MASH expert. Also, Daily Flash Latino Executive Producer Hugo Arenas. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So be with us and be involved by phone or chat room. If you came to land today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast. They're available, including our podcasts of all August long, at all of our destinations, including iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, as well as our newbie, that's podvine.com. Love to hear from you. What's your thoughts about where TV is and where it's going? How do you be similar or different with what Mark had to say? Well, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, by social media. And we do respond to you when you respond to us. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants, not to say those of Blog Talk Radio and other series of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Bacon is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We are back less than 48 hours from now, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, kicking off with our MASH at 50 retrospective roundtable. That's, of course, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, all of our podcast destinations, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor. Find all the tools available to you as we go from pandemic to endemic. And then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.